This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast. So if we rewind to 2017, 2018-ish, okay, ARK had a price target and a study around Tesla, around their profitability and how their electric vehicle business would do over time. And what I remember seeing as a retail investor then and now, but then was impossible. The craziest thing I've ever heard. What the heck's going on, right? These guys are like loopy out there with crazy targets, right? And then lo and behold, it came to fruition, right? How much similarity do you see then and now? If you look at the two sort of research reports that ARK has put out there, so the EV stuff before and now with the robotaxi and a little bit of bot that you guys threw in there, how do you view that? Is there similar vibes? Talk me through that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of similarities between the production hell era and now. I think that at least for the past few years, I feel like the biggest difference in the research that we put out there and what we believe at ARK and kind of like I would say the street consensus is now really focused around the robotaxi autonomy opportunity. I feel like it's the least appreciated, and when I say least appreciated, I'm talking about like seeing other models that actually incorporate it out there. I feel like a lot of people, now it's like people take autopilot seriously. They take maybe FSD seriously and the attach rate on that. But I mean, as you too well know, like this is a totally different business opportunity and it much, much larger than just that software revenue that they're getting today. So I do feel like that's something that's that we've differed from others for a while on now.
Yeah. Why do you think there's such a hesitation for others to do what y'all did, which is really start including this into your research reports and actually putting a price target to it? Is it just that the numbers are crazy? Is it that it's hard to study? Help me understand that a little bit better.
Well, I think going back to, the history of Tesla, it hasn't always been a straightforward company in that it doesn't fit into like these neat buckets. Like it's okay. Is it an auto company or is it actually like a technology company because it's so software enabled, it owns so much more of the software ecosystem than the typical auto manufacturer. Is it an AI company now? At ARK, like we have a number of people that cover the stock for that reason, because we kind of want that convergence of ideas. And we talk to the analyst that covers semis for us about his thoughts on Dojo and things like that. So I do think that's part of it. But I also think that, at ARK, we're long-term looking. Our price target is 5 years out. But we think about technology in terms of the next 5 to 10 years. And robotaxis right now are just happening on such a small scale that I often get asked, when is this going to happen? And I feel like people aren't even necessarily aware that Waymo is actually operating today. So I feel like there's a little bit of that. Like it's not tangible. I can't see it yet. It's so far in the future. But I think it's going to happen sooner than most expect.
Yeah. What was the thing that flipped for y'all that allowed you to sit down and actually, in the last few weeks or months, however long it's taken to put this report together, that finally said, okay, we're ready to go. We feel like this is going to happen, like it or not. Self-driving cars are coming, and Tesla looks like they're in the leading position to do that. What was the major switch?
Well, I would actually go back a number of years to think of that switch point, because if you recall, this is like even pre 2018. I don't remember the exact year, but I want to say like 6 to 8 years ago. For a while, Elon Musk was saying that autonomy was so difficult that he thought the last 10% was so, was such a big hurdle to cross that he wasn't actually sure whether or not that would ever happen. In other words, it wasn't always clear that Tesla was going to create a fully autonomous car. And I think once he, you know, hopped on sort of that train and said, oh, actually, this is a problem that we're going to seriously tackle and look at internally, that is when we first started looking at it. What's changed over the past year or so, and in this most recent model update, is really just increased confidence. So last year we were saying, you know, 2/3 of the enterprise value in 2027 could be ascribed to robotaxi. Now we're saying that's close to 90%. And it's partly, you know, because it's just that much later in the model that we expect the network to expand in those additional 2 years. But it's also, you know, our confidence has increased on the updates that we have seen come out of FSD, on all the AI advances. And so it is happening later than we initially expected, and then what Elon has said and what many have forecasted. But I would say it's coming later, but our confidence is up.
Got it. Yeah. What I found the most interesting about this whole thing is I think there's so little credit given. Okay. And this is like, you know, this is all assuming that Tesla is able to reach level 5, that, you know, all the miles they're collecting will end up yielding a robotaxi network or level 4, level 5 system or whatever you want to call it nowadays. The scale of that and how they're going to be able to execute it because of the decisions they made 6, 7, 8 years ago to put an inference computer in the car with like $2,000 worth of parts, if that makes the car drive itself, to do it 8 years ago. And then moving forward, all they have to do is just update the software and maybe upgrade the chip as well. It's like, it always like hurts my brain when I try to have conversations about this with other folks that are like, well, Waymo, all they have to do is just put more LiDAR cars, you know, in places and then can go, you know, it's like, it's going to be super easy. You just throw them up there. And I'm like, okay, guys, come on. Like let's sit down and it's 200,000, whatever, how much it costs for a Waymo. It's super expensive. They have to map out the roads. They got to hire the people to ensure that the car is doing the right thing. Anytime a cone gets moved from one corner to the other one, you got to remap it to make sure it doesn't, you know, run over the cone or whatever that is. What are your conversations with other folks? Like, can you help me shed some light into that? Like, why is that such a difficult conversation to have?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a good point because I also feel like that's not so well understood. The scale and, you know, I would add to that. It's like the manufacturing capacity that Tesla has because it is the actual vehicle maker. They can flip this switch with some cars on the road that join the network. But also when you look at and they get so much data from that, you know, over 1 billion miles cumulatively in FSD now on a daily basis. If you look at the whole fleet compared to Waymo, we've estimated it's like roughly 100x the data collection capability. But yeah, Waymo 5+ years ago, they had put in an order for something like 70,000 cars. And I'm actually a little confused at why they haven't expanded their fleet more than they have today. And I want to give them credit because they launched first. I mean, they were doing this back in 2019. It's just for sure. Getting to scale has proven to be a different question. So I'm not quite sure what has happened with their discussion with automakers. And I mean, they do have a Geely partnership. You know, clearly they're working on it, but it does seem harder to do than this vertically integrated model that we're seeing with Tesla for sure.
Yeah, I was curious with where y'all are at now on like just the confidence you have said in your model that basically you're predicting almost 100% likelihood that Tesla launches a commercial robotaxi service at scale before 2027. And so what is it about that time frame? Like why 2025 or 2026? Why are those such high confidence years for you compared to, you know, it being able to push out a little bit further than that even?
Yeah. Well, I think, it's really so many things that we sort of calibrate internally. It's, I mean, one, I think, again, you can't overlook the advances that we've seen happen in AI. And often these things happen overnight and it's like somewhat unsuspected. Humans are not that good at predicting like the timing of the next AI breakthrough. And actually even we have this chart in our big ideas deck where it, like zooming out a bit, if you look at artificial generalized intelligence, the time to the number of years to that happening that experts have been predicting as we've seen these AI advances over the past year has shrunk pretty dramatically. I mean, you could just see it's like a downward, a downturn there in terms of like the distance to it. So something's happening largely. And that has to benefit autonomous driving. And we're seeing evidence of that already. I mean, some of the transformers were popularized by large language models. Then Tesla was using them for a while. Unclear whether they're using them as aggressively now in their current structure. But we've seen that bleed through. The other thing is, and as you all know, because you drive Teslas and you use this software, the videos that I'm seeing come out, particularly in places like California, where the software works really well, you're already seeing drives where someone can take their hands off the wheel, no interventions, or near no interventions, where it seems like a solvable problem in some scenarios. I know Tesla wants to launch nationally, but let's just think, what do they need in order to launch this service in one city? And they seem kind of close to doing that, given current functionality. And I'm not going to say it's perfect. It's not. I see all the complaints that people have and the instances where it's still messing up. Is regulation going to be a problem? Well, if you look at the data that Tesla put out, I really want them to update this statistic, and we heard Elon talk about it a little, but there's last year they put out a stat, the miles between FSD interventions. And I adjusted that to look at just surface streets or city streets, because at the time that stack wasn't working on the highway. And it looked roughly 5 times safer than the data that Tesla publishes for human-driven Teslas, in their safety report. So, and then, now Elon's saying he sees line of sight to that being, one intervention every once a year or not even a year. So that would equate to a 4x improvement on that. So I think that it looks like they can statistically show regulators now that this works. So I'm less concerned about that as a hurdle. So it becomes more of an execution question, I think. If the technology looks like it's there, we're seeing early signs that I think it's solvable. It's just when will they do it? What will the setup look like? What will the back end look like?
Yeah, for sure. For me, the light bulb went off when I thought it was actually two different instances. The first one was my favorite test for FSD, the wife test, which is twofold. So the one was the passenger. So my wife went from literally trying to kill me for turning this on. What are you doing, you crazy person? Why do you keep turning this thing on? To being she would prefer me turning it on than turning it off. And then her using the vehicle on the road with FSD on, with her behind the wheel. Because before she was hesitant to use it. And now she's been looking forward to use it. And the reason why I use her as an example, it's more about the fact that she's not this crazy psycho tech person like I am, that's obsessed about this stuff, right? She's a casual person that just wants to have things that make her happy and have convenience around the things that she does, right? And so that was one thing that I saw. I was like, okay, cool. So we're going somewhere, right? And to try and bias away from my biases and to try and get some real world exposure to this. So that was a very small thing. And this is on top, of course, of all the videos and all the data that's out there. And then the second one was when they released V12, and it went from this software stack that had, it was making progress, but it had a lot of these little corner cases. This turn is weird. This stop sign stop is weird. This left turn at this light is weird. The way it handled pedestrians is weird. And then V12 came out with a brand new stack that they were working on in earnest for maybe a year, the actual end-to-end neural network process that they had set up. And then with a one-year-old stack, they wiped out tens, if not hundreds, of these little things that I was getting tired of. And then all of a sudden you have a thing that's not only just as good as a previous version, but better in a fraction of the time it took to develop the previous 6 to 7 years with hardware that's 6 to 7 years old. And then when that, I'm like, okay, so of course, so what do we think the end result's going to be here, y'all? This seems like an obvious place. And so the only thing that I can think of that could derail this whole thing is that AI advancements and where they're going as far as leveraging neural networks and how they can make things be potentially 10, 20, 100 times safer or better than a human, that's not a reality, right? That's somehow not true. But I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that. Can you speak, Actually, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about all the crap I just said.
Well, first, I mean, I'm with you. So for me, it's the opposite relationship. It's like my husband is driving and he's talking. He looks over at me and I'm like, okay, let's continue this conversation in FSD. You know, like, please put it on before you get animated and take your hands off the wheel. So, I definitely think that I do think that it does. I live in New York City. So when there were certainly times where one, it's like using it in bumper to bumper traffic is a different scenario and cars are really aggressive and you got to yield to cabs. So I still think that I see things that could be worked on there, but it's way smoother than it's ever been in the past. And I can drive to my parents' house in Connecticut with pretty much no interventions. I mean, I haven't done a full door-to-door drive yet, but because it's more of a comfort thing sometimes when I take over, but I feel like it's gotten a lot better at that. Another thing that I didn't mention, you know, and you talked about these model updates that Tesla's making, like they've also said that they aren't compute constrained anymore. That now the constraint is these like validation drivers that are the humans that test the software before they release it to people, to car owners. And it's actually hard to find an intervention event to know whether the software is better than the last release because they're becoming so infrequent. So I feel like that's another sign. It's definitely somewhat of an art and a science here, estimating when the exact release date is going to be. And I'm not going to say that, you know, I'm perfect and I know that it's going to happen this month. Right. But it just feels like it should, again, like given what I've seen in terms of, in some cases, drives being possible with pretty much no intervention in certain scenarios, certain like videos, like Uber drivers that are using it. It just seems like they could launch in a city in the next year or two. That's kind of roughly how I think of it.
I agree with you 100%. I think the other thing too about this, which is like, you know, when I listen to the discourse around, can Tesla even do this? Like Waymo, and I want to talk about the Chinese players too that you're seeing. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on those too. But I think the way Tesla is approaching it is such a novel approach, which is delete as many sensors as possible and just go vision, that, you know, novel solutions or novel problems, in this case, self-driving cars, you know, no one has done it before. You have a bunch of different people trying different methods, mostly LiDAR or no LiDAR, I guess, is two buckets we can think of. The novel solution that Tesla is going through, like you have nothing from history or the past outside of maybe AI in adjacent spaces, like in other areas that can even tell you if this is a possible thing. And I think that's why there's so much hesitancy from a lot of folks in believing this is possible, because the problem is so crazy and the solution is so crazy. And the guy that's doing it is so crazy sometimes that you combine these three things and it becomes like a black box nebulous thing that people are trying their best to navigate through. But I think having people like yourself and Ark, you know, doing a lot of the lead work and putting it out there for people to analyze and see, hopefully, I think we'll turn more eyes to this in earnest, because I think all three of us agree on this. I think this is like, I feel like it's inevitable, but it's hard to say with 100% confidence because it's never done before. It seems like it's an inevitable outcome, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I mean, we do. Yeah, I hear your point. I mean, you're saying because of their unique approach, like, because I like to use Waymo as a proof point. And I think it is worth using. You know, they cross the finish line. You can ride in a fully autonomous. I rode in a Waymo, no one in the front seat, you know, and my husband thought it was so boring. He looked at his phone for half the time. Right. So it's like it works. right. Exactly. But yeah, Tesla has taken a unique approach. And when I talk to other autonomous driving companies, I think that that is the biggest critique still on what they've done, that it's a camera only system, you know, the move away from radar. Of course, you know, look like they could introduce that sensor again if they wanted to, I think, potentially. But you have to think that given I mean, again, that's where I go back to these other AI breakthroughs, because a lot of these are based on, or, you know, there's a subset of these that are based on images, image generation, things like diffusion models that are kind of good at determining what's noise and what's not in an image. And that's kind of exactly what Tesla needs in these scenarios. That's, I think, where we see the confidence in it. And it kind of just made sense for them to choose this, to choose a camera-based system, because, you know, it was at a time where LiDAR wasn't really scaled. It was probably too expensive to put on every car. You know, I think LiDAR could make sense for things like autonomous trucks. Most of the companies are using it. And the safety case is higher because it's something that's really heavy that you're moving on the road. But I do think it does, it looks as if it's possible with vision only. And the one thing that I think many companies are jealous of, again, is the video data set that Tesla has that no one else has. So that's, okay, vision only, harder problem, but this data set is kind of what would get them there.
Yeah, I guess before we go to China, let's just say, you know, with version 12, we've seen obviously huge leaps forward in capability, but, you know, there was kind of a period early on in, say it was 12.2 when we first started to see releases to customers, and then there were rumors that there were some safety critical interventions, and it kind of took a little while for Tesla to finally get that into the hands of customers. But then it's like, it seems like there's a process at the beginning of this neural net that it is kind of hard to predict all of the different things where it might go wrong. And so it takes them a little while to kind of get their hands around it and, you know, put all the guardrails in place and get it into position. And it kind of seems like we're in that position again with 12.4. How do those things impact y'all's perception of, you know, what are the ceilings of a full end-to-end neural net architecture? You know, are we making good progress, or are there still a lot more unknown unknowns that we're going to have to contend with? How does that, like the development arc of 12 so far, feel to arc as you look at the trajectory?
Yeah, a lot of interesting points there. I mean, when talking about a full end-to-end neural net architecture, I think it, from what I've seen and read about and heard, it seems like that, you know, they're definitely a lot closer to that goal than they ever have been in the past. It seems like there's likely still pieces of it. Like, I'm not sure that it's, you know, there's like totally any piece of hard-coded manually written script is gone. I'm not sure that it's completely gone is kind of what I'm saying. It seems like it's more end-to-end, you know, one structure than it's ever been before. But I could imagine that in some cases there might be some hand-tuned things. And like a good example, or one example that you could look to for that, is that stop sign example that they've talked about, where, okay, well, to actually follow what regulators want, you have to come to a complete stop, even though no one does that in their everyday driving, like, you know, and it's like that, it might not even be a handwritten line of code, but it's like they have to force their cars to look at the specific videos of the professional drivers doing that. And it does seem like, again, the hardest problem now is figuring out, well, is this version software better than the next? Because it's the validators, the human validators, that are the ones, you know, that are the current bottleneck. But I think that, you know, when you talked earlier about level 4 and level 5, I expect autonomy to commercialize at level 4. So I don't expect it to be perfect in every scenario. Certainly, I mean, not in the scenarios that are dangerous for humans to drive today either. In fact, maybe it's even more cautious than a human. But if it's a less expensive option than driving your personal car, or than, you know, today's ride hailing services, that's what would make it compelling. And you might be willing to put up with some of those events that are, you know, more cautious. And you might be willing to put up with what Elon described at the shoulder event, which is a remote operator in rare instances telling the car what to do by remotely sending it driving instructions.
Yeah, along the lines of sort of like one of the things that we're mentioning about regulation, I'll ask you this one first. One of the things that I've been thinking through is that, you know, one of my biggest hesitations from years ago, not hesitations, but like things that I was really concerned about, was regulators really hampering the progress of this technology. And I think the closer we're getting to the actual reality of having a ton of self-driving cars out there, and you sort of perhaps alluded to this a little earlier, that fear is going away more and more. Because, you know, once I start really thinking about, number one, what it means to have human drivers on the road, and I talked about, I was ranting about this with my wife a couple of days ago. I was like in a car and I saw a person always run a red light, okay? And I'm like, okay, so you're telling me in the United States, regulators allow humans to go this way and that way at 65, 55 miles an hour. And then the only thing that's stopping that car from stopping is a red light that someone has to pay attention to. And if they miss that, it's like carnage and chaos. They allow that, but they're not going to allow self-driving cars that are always paying attention. That seems kind of weird, right? So that was like, once I started really thinking about the impact to safety, my fears went down a little bit. But then I started seeing how certain jurisdictions in the United States were handling the rollout of like, you know, Waymo. And, you know, the thing that happened with Cruise and San Fran, I believe, was a disaster, but Waymo was still able to expand. You know, you have states like Florida and I think Nevada are becoming very friendly with self-driving cars. You have China allowing a foreign company to come in and operate their self-driving stack in their country. So it seems like there's a forcing function for self-driving cars that's almost driven by regulators in a way that I didn't foresee. What do you think?
Yeah, I know, so much to unpack in that question too. I love it. So the U.S.
We like to ask 20 questions in one. I'm sorry.
No, it's I'm with it. I'm with it. Okay. So the U.S. has been, in my opinion, surprisingly lenient on autonomous driving, and it's really kind of by accident. It's because the responsibility has sat with the states to determine whether or not cars are allowed on public roads, you know, within state boundaries. In places like, you know, China, it's like they've been. It is kind of city to city, but the way that approval works is, you know, okay, you can sure take your autonomous car, you can drive it in Shanghai or Shenzhen, but so far it's been like certain areas of the city. So it's not okay. You can do it within this whole you know, region like it is here. It's more constrained, and that's also parts of Europe have worked that way. And when you do that, it's like, yeah, I mean, you're basically pushing everyone to create some kind of geofence solution, which is going to be brittle and not going to see as many corner cases. So that doesn't seem as good. So yeah, the history is kind of on our side there with the US. I do think that every crash is still going to be a headline. And we're seeing it with Waymo too. They get investigated for, you know, I saw recently the car crashed into I think a light pole or something. So, and I expect there to still be crashes too. They're not going to be totally eliminated. But you know, early evidence suggests, looking again at that FSD versus human driven Tesla data, that it should be better than humans. And we know most accidents are caused by humans is the other thing. So, you know, I think I'm optimistic on that front. I think that regulators are looking to know that this is safer than human drivers. And we have some precedent for this, right? Because things like auto emergency braking are now mandated as standard on every new car because it's a technology, it's an assisted driving technology that works, that saves lives. So I feel like autonomous driving will be similar, where one day, you know, it'll be a privilege to drive a car. It'll be like a sport, like riding a horse. I think we're far from that right now. But that's kind of how I think of the regulatory landscape. And Cruise, I'll just quickly touch on. We, you know, in that safety analysis that I did, if you look at Cruise and Waymo do this, and where they've both published reports where they make a lot of adjustments for their autonomous cars. So they look at, okay, like for instance, okay, let's look at not the average accident rate, but ride hail average accident rate. And let's actually go even further micro into this one specific city, the accident rate in that city that's been observed. So I've taken their statistics and basically tried to compare them against the national average to try to make it more fair. And it did look like Cruise was taking more risks than Waymo. So I think that's unfortunately why it got shut down, which was a bummer. I was rooting for them. I, you know, I, I liked that they were expanding faster into cities, but after doing that analysis, perhaps they were doing it at some safety risk. But Tesla's, again, the data, they're arguably one of the companies that set up best to statistically show that they're safer than average, because it's not hundreds of cars, it's millions of cars that are driving around and demonstrating this on a daily basis.
Do you think, and this is a little bit of a prediction game, do you think they'll have something at Robotaxi event in August on the 8th that will allow them to have something end this year, potentially next year? Like, how do you view that event within the context of your report?
I'd love to get your opinion on this. So I'm going to throw the question back at you. But I've been watching, and at ARC, we've been watching the videos that they've been putting, like the teaser video that they put at the end of the shareholder meeting where they demonstrate what the app looks like. They put something in the report that they put out for their quarterly earnings call as well. So I feel like they're gearing up to give us more information on that app. I think if they were to launch something as soon as this year, I would be thrilled if it were like a full autonomy solution, but they could also launch something with human drivers in the meantime if they wanted to. And I've written about that in the past. And Tesla hasn't really talked about this much publicly, but I think it's possible, and it's a way to get the business model in check, right? Because you have to set up the infrastructure to do this, and they could get like data that's relevant to ride hail. And I think they can kind of already do that because they can likely discern which cars are Ubers on their current network, but. There's a number of reasons to do it, and it'll start that recurring revenue stream early before autonomy. So could be that as well. But what do you guys think?
I'm trying to pull up something for you guys to look at that I think you might enjoy.
Show and tell. Let's go.
This is Rosalie Nathans on LinkedIn. And if you look at what she's saying here, she works at Tesla. From the little teaser video at the end, this looks like the person who is in the vehicle. So she's claiming that they have a working demo inside the company internally. So it's just, is that true? Is that not true? Hard to say. I can't verify it absolutely, but this is on LinkedIn. And I just thought that was an interesting piece of information that a viewer pointed out to me and that I wanted to kind of pass along.
Well, first of all, you guys are the best because you follow this so closely. So I haven't seen this yet, but I'm psyched to see it. So I think, it doesn't surprise me that they could put together a demo, right? I don't think they're going to release a geofence solution, but they could geofence a demo if they wanted to, right? Just, okay, this is the pickup drop off. We know the car works really well on this particular route. Like maybe it's near the Tesla factory where all their employees drive. I think I'd love to hear more at the event, and I feel like it's coming, and this has convinced me even more.
Yeah. I think the, I put out sort of what I was expecting out of the event a couple weeks ago, if I remember correctly. And it's kind of like morphing the closer we get a little bit. Because I really do think that teaser, again, like we're Hans and I, the psychos that watch it, wait until the event is over and then we're like, ooh, what's this video? So that definitely points to they will likely, very, very likely show at least an app, like something that outlines what the rider should expect when they're hailing a car from Tesla. The frustrating part about that video is that right as the car was pulling up, it cut out before you could see into the cabin to see if there was a person behind the wheel or not. I'm like, ah, damn it. So there's a teaser. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you version 12, and if you sort of follow the breadcrumbs that I think Elon Musk is putting out there about, they have visibility into 12.5 and 12.6, and they're down to an intervention a week or whatever that number is, it seems very likely that they'll be able to set up at least a demo for the event that shows this in action, right? In some way that says, hey, this is, we're going to have a self-driving ride hailing network. It's going to be through our app. You'll be able to call a car from Tesla, potentially, and you'll be able to get into it and be driven around at what I think is going to be just at, if not lower prices than Uber. And I think you all talked about this in the research report as well, because you're yanking the biggest cost variable out of the equation, which is the driver. And that becomes the forcing function for your app to be downloaded by, you know, by the millions potentially over time, if you sort of go that direction. So I think they'll definitely show that. An app that where you can ride hail self-driving cars. I think the variable there is that Tesla definitely likes to announce things, it seems, way ahead of time, you know. So Cybertruck was 4 years, but that was also supply chain and all that stuff, right? Model 3 was about a year or so. Model Y was about a year or so. So I think between, you know, middle year 2024 to middle year 2025, it seems like there is a path for Tesla to have a ride-hailing, self-driving network in maybe some localities that allow it within the next 12 months. And if that's, if they're confident about that, they'll probably announce that at the event, with perhaps some partnerships or some discussions they've already had with maybe, I don't know, the mayor of San Francisco or whoever, or DeSantis in Florida or whatever. So I very well expect that. And I think in conjunction with that, they'll also show that two-seater Cybercab. I think the no steering wheel and pedal solution, that's going to be part of that equation as well. So they'll say, you know, you can ride hail a existing Model 3 or Y, but if you really want the super cool, private, awesome experience, lowest cost per mile, sick sound system, comfortable chair, whatever, get the Cybercab, and then that will come and pick you up and so on and so forth. I envision something like that, but who knows? I mean, I'm throwing just darts at the wall, right? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly, like, if they could certainly launch a solution again with humans behind the wheel, and we already know that's possible with Uber. And I would add to that that the cost advantage that they have, it's not just that you're removing the driver. If you increase the utilization rate so that the car, I mean, we know it'll get a higher utilization rate than personally driven vehicles. So that's like 70 cents to a dollar per mile costs someone in the US on average to drive their car. You know, the average ride hail price is like $2 to $3. I saw $3 recently. So, can they undercut that? Well, it's an electric vehicle. It's got lower maintenance and operating costs than the gas-powered car. So certainly better than the average car already, just because it's a Tesla. And then if you're spreading all the fixed costs out over more mileage, and theoretically they'd get better utilization rate than Uber cars as well, because Uber relies on people to sign their car up for the network. So maybe like some Uber cars, you know, maybe you only drive Mondays, Tuesdays or something. Like, not everyone is a full-time everyday Uber driver. I think I've looked at the average mileage is something like 20,000 per Uber car. That's my estimate. But it could be maybe more like Elon has been saying, five times the utilization rate of a human driver. So that would be more like 70,000. My model is like 70 to 100,000. I think it could be a little more, but within that range. So then you're lowering the cost even more. So even a Tesla on Uber would be cheaper on the Tesla network if it's autonomous and goes more miles.
On the Tesla network thing, you know, just thinking back to how Elon has rolled out the bot that, you know, they put out the dancing guy in the costume, basically as a stake in the ground, that this is the way that we're moving. And I'm wondering if this Tesla demo was essentially the Tesla network version of the dancing guy and the robot, where it's like kind of thrown together. They are doing something behind the scenes. And like, this is, hey, okay, people, like, let's start to coalesce around this idea and let's start to move forward. But that said, I think, you know, one of the things that we know is that there's a huge fleet of validation drivers, like you've mentioned. And then if there's already this fleet of validation drivers and they want to start previewing and working out the kinks in a Tesla network app, to me, like, the thing that makes sense for the development of the Tesla network app is to go ahead and have your validation drivers be operating this service internally to the company. And this is probably going to be something that kind of rolls out further and further to Tesla employees, probably starting in Palo Alto, then potentially expanding to Fremont and Austin, as they really work through just refining all the details and getting everything really working. So that's kind of what I would maybe expect on August 8th, is that they're announcing that they're going to be opening up the Tesla network to employees within, you know, a month or by the end of the year or something to that effect. And then obviously, yeah, I would agree with Farzad on a lot of the predictions about exactly what are the form factors of vehicles that we see, and some of Elon's commentary around those types of things.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, they already have professional drivers on the payroll. I mean, even if they needed some of them to like check specific scenarios, what couldn't they take like a portion of them to jumpstart the service? Maybe, yeah. I'm super excited for that event. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's going to be sick. And then the other thing too, like Airbnb, like the how Elon Musk frames it, it's like a combination of Uber and Airbnb. I think that points to maybe it's not, you know, maybe most of the network utilization potentially would be you rent a car for multiple days or weeks at a time that you can use to drive around. That's somebody else's car potentially. So like how Turo, I don't know if you're familiar with the app Turo. Yeah. So it's like a driverless Turo. It just shows up at your house instead of somebody, or instead of meeting somebody, then you just have the car. You have the car for multiple days, and then Tesla insures the car through Tesla insurance. You know, potentially you can get a discount on charging if you charge at home. You use, you know, Tesla energy or whatever. You know, they have that thing in Texas where it's like $30 a month or whatever it is. So that's where the verticals start to kick in, and it gets really, really wild too. So yeah, I'm very curious to see how they execute this. On the China topic, what are you seeing out of that region in relation to self-driving? Because one of the big things that I hear from the sort of the side that says Tesla is not where you think it is, because China is making insane developments and they're actually, you know, either behind the tech or they're going to struggle to get a foothold in the area because there's a lot of competitors. How do y'all view that market?
Yeah, I think Chinese competitors are formidable on the electric vehicle front, no doubt. And Elon himself has said that, that he takes those automakers seriously. BYD, for instance, is a company that ARC invests in for that reason. I think on the autonomy front, it's a different group of companies. I mean, yes, I think BYD has talked about autonomy. Pretty much every auto company has talked about autonomy at this point. But the company that has like the most announcements and the most PR releases, it seems to be Baidu. And maybe they're also in favor with the Chinese government, which is an important thing in China, because they're getting a lot of they seem to have gotten the most approvals in terms of testing and launching some level of service. I know that some of the services were still had humans behind the wheel, and some of them were geofenced in this way where it's, you know, it's like point to point, like certain pickup, certain drop off points. You know, I think that they have ambitions to evolve beyond that, but I'm watching that company. Although, you know, it's like a question of whether or not like investing in China at this moment is its own question, but I'm watching at least the technology progress there. And then there's another company, Pony AI, and they have a US presence as well that was testing autonomous driving in China. You know, and I've heard the argument that their technology arguably superior, but again, it's like a scale question versus others. So, but some of the things that I've heard about the Baidu approach sound funny to me. Like one of them is they use HD maps, which is something that I think is, again, just a brittle approach and hard to scale. Perhaps it's like a lucrative business for them to sell this to local governments, like services off of the maps, but I don't think that those are necessary for autonomous driving. And in fact, it seems like you kind of need both. Even if you use high definition maps, you still want the car to be able to react to unknown scenarios in order to launch a successful commercial service. So that's kind of like my high level thoughts. But I mean, Tesla has seen, like, compared to other foreign companies, Elon clearly, wants to be in good graces with the Chinese government. They were the first to wholly own their factory, as you guys know. versus partner with another player. So, I mean, they've had amazing progress. And I think it's because China wants to be a leader in autonomy and EVs, and they see Tesla, you know, they don't want to prevent Tesla from forging ahead within their country to some extent, because they care so much about being one of the first to really scale those two technologies. So I think that that mindset is working in Tesla's favor. But in our model, we think that the economics in China will be less than those in the US. First of all, prices are cheaper in China now, but also maybe they have to partner with some local entity and actually pay them some kind of fee. I think that's a possibility.
Got it. And then one of the things we talked about this earlier in the podcast around how, you know, vision plus inference on board gives you a giant scale advantage because of it's a lot cheaper to produce a vehicle versus one that has multiple sensors, you know, plus sort of the verticals that Tesla has from a manufacturing standpoint. If that ends up being the winner, like let's say Vision works and Vision gets you to level 4, level 5. How do y'all think about, you know, you're talking to two Texans when we keep saying y'all. The All Texan Podcast. How do y'all see the, how other people would be able to keep up or compete in a world where vision plus inference compute ends up being a solution? Because it seems like the scale question is going to be so much in favor of one player that if you just fast forward, the number of units of vision plus inference on the car versus everybody else becomes a larger percentage over time. How do you all see that playing out?
Yeah, I think it'll be really hard for the next competitor. So the way that I see it playing out is, okay, Tesla wasn't first, Waymo was, but then who is the first to get to scale? And that's a really important question because I think at first you can charge Uber equivalent or maybe even like premium Uber equivalent prices for ride hail. And then as the service expands to break into more demand segments, prices will come down, and they can come down because I think the underlying costs will be cheaper than today's ride hailing services. So, but you know, because of that dynamic, like high prices first, I think the first 50% of addressable miles will be where the lion's share of economics are. I have a graph in our Big Ideas report that talks about that this year. And so I think that if you get to scale, one, it's like a hard technical barrier to pass. So your competitors need to pass that as well. And then they need to do so while, you know, the first company to pass has this cost advantage. It just seems really hard. And we saw some of that in the ride hail space, like all these companies competing, offering like zero cost rides, things like that. And then a lot of them went away. I think it's possible autonomous driving could be even more consolidated, like regional monopolies. Of course, like it all depends on what like governments decide to do in various countries to you know, in terms of allowing competition. But that's how I see it playing out for now. So it's really important to be first to scale here. And that's why we care so much about Tesla's data. Yeah.
One more question in just the thought process that you have as you modeled this out. I remember that Elon has made comments, I think this may have been 2019, around Autonomy Day, that once autonomy is reached and they're really putting pedal to the metal for going after scale, that they were potentially going to run the company at cash flow break even and the implication was that they're going to be building so many internally owned robo-taxis that are not being sold to customers, that the production of those internally owned robo-taxis was going to bring cash flow of the company as a whole down to break even. And they were going to do that all the way through the scaling process. How are y'all thinking about that specifically, and how does it impact the way that you model the profitability of the business moving forward?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. I think that would definitely be a smart move because I think, you know, at ARC, we believe that putting in the dollars and investing in innovation early to gain that competitive advantage is so important that we support our investment companies in doing so. Not every investor thinks that way, but that's certainly what we believe. in our Tesla model, we assume that they, like in the 5-year period, that they're taking the cash that they earn off of vehicles and off of ride hail and reinvesting that in the business, and that, yeah, that essentially they're trying to move towards like a working capital neutral position in that time frame. And then actually to try to be like conservative in how we model it, like in the final, we stopped doing that towards the end of the model, like the final year, we don't have them reinvesting that cash. And like the assumption is that you're looking at it as an X growth company, even though in fact, we don't think it will be an X growth company in that time. And then we assign a market multiple to it that we also, I also think could be considered conservative because, you know, it's like, for instance, I give 19x to the autonomy business, 19 times EBITDA, that is enterprise value to EBITDA. And that is kind of more in line with what you would look at, like an average, you know, software multiple. Again, but at that time, I think Tesla will still be aggressively scaling. So that's how we factor that in. But yeah, I am supportive of Tesla doing that, again, because it's so critical to get to scale. And this is such an amazing opportunity that being first and being first at volume really matters.
We got about 5 minutes left. I want to be respectful of your time. I want to ask you about the human or robot developments that have been coming up here. So in the report, there was a, so y'all said, you know, a little bit is like, hey, we think robots going to help bring COGS down. We don't have it in earnest though. How, so talk through what y'all are seeing in the space. How do you see Tesla's developments versus maybe Figure or anybody else if you've done the research? Is this a 20-year thing? Is this a 10-year thing? Is this a 5-year thing? Yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes. So ARK is actually invested in Figure in our venture fund. So I do know a little bit about the space, and my colleague Sam Kors has done a lot of great work on robotics. So, you know, in our big ideas deck, he's estimating the total address, the total addressable market for generalizable robots like humanoids could be roughly $24 trillion between like manufacturing and household tasks. In our Tesla model, the, you know, we're not assuming that they externally sell Optimus in the next 5 years. Although it is possible that they do. That's not an assumption that we made this year. And actually, to be honest, there was a little bit of internal debate about what the Optimus assumption should be in this model, because it is, you know, it's early and it's like we're trying to hone in on our best estimate here. So I think that could be considered another thing that could potentially be considered conservative. Although, of course, other things like our robotaxi volumes, I think, are higher than most elsewhere that you'll see. But on that particular assumption, maybe conservative, and we're basically assuming so they reuse these robots internally. You know, they work some share of labor hours in the factory, and that's the variable that you can slide around in the model, and that they have the productivity of one to two or three times that of their human counterparts. So all in all, you know, and even if you were to scale the number of volume, the volume of robots that they produced, it has like a single digit percentage point impact on manufacturing costs. But that's not to say, and I put this in my tweet thread, it's not to say that we don't believe Tesla could be a leader in robots that move through physical space. I think they can absolutely use what they learned to do in autonomous driving and become a leader in embodied AI. So I think this is an incredible opportunity for them. It's just a question of when will that happen? And I heard all of Elon's comments at the shareholder meeting. You know, he arguably is more aggressive than we are on this particular, his assumptions on this particular opportunity. But again, he didn't assign a year to his estimates. So I think that's really the question. It's like maybe the next 5 years, you know, autonomy really dominates the story here in terms of value. But okay, 10, 15 years, you know, Optimus could be a real business then, as could be, you know, things like AI as a service, which we actually don't have in our model at all, because I think that's just a longer time frame.
Yeah, this AI thing starts getting so weird once this human or robot thing takes hold. It's like, I don't even know how to think about it. It's so, so weird, you know? And I can't wait to see the work y'all put out on that, because it's going to be so interesting to see how a firm like yours that's so forward-looking and is willing to put in the work to study this stuff and actually try to paint a picture long-term of what it's going to pan out. I would love to contrast y'all's and everyone else's and see, okay, like, I'm curious to see how you're viewing the future, you know, but it still feels so early though. That's the thing. It still feels so, so early.
Yeah. I'm excited to see. I mean, we saw that video demonstrating the robot picking and placing the battery cells. So I'm curious to see like what the other tasks and functionality that they're able to, get off the ground are. And I think compared to companies like Figure, I mean, they have the manufacturing scale advantage. They have the learnings from autonomy, the inference chip they built in house. But, you know, companies like Figure have I don't think every company is going to want to work with Tesla and Optimus. Like certainly other automakers are not going to want to. So yeah, there could be multiple players, in that market. So I'm so excited. That's like probably the next big wave in, this convergence between hardware and software and AI, I think is definitely humanoid robots and robots of all kinds.
For sure. Hans, did you want to hit something before I ask my last question here? Okay. How did Tasha end up doing what she's doing today? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, you know, I've been lucky enough to be at ARC for the life of the firm, which has been about 10 years. In school, I studied math and finance. So I always loved research. And that's why I ended up joining ARC, because it was an opportunity where the research really matters for the investment process. So that's like what I found so exciting about it. And prior to ARC, I worked in consulting, in management consulting, and I actually worked mainly with manufacturers. So it wasn't on autonomous cars, because that wasn't really that was a thing in like small circles back then. But I did work with some auto suppliers, and I got to see a lot of factories. So I saw, I worked on some logistics projects that I got to take a look at how the supply chain works in general. So some of that has been, you know, helpful in my ARC career. But really, I'm just a person that loves research. And I know Kathy took a chance on me as her intern at her previous job when she worked at AllianceBernstein. And I was actually the intern of someone who was her analyst then, who is now our chief futurist. His name is Brett Winton. So I already knew them. And when I heard about ARC and they told me, hey, you're going to be researching autonomous cars and 3D printing, I was like, sign me up tomorrow. So it was really serendipitous. It just worked out.
That is awesome. That's a really cool story, ARC. You and I share a math degree. I have a math degree as well, but my GPA was terrible. I didn't study nearly as much as I should. Somehow I made it though, passed it. Yeah, crazy. That's awesome.
I love that. I'm such a math person through and through. So
one parting question, and feel free not to answer this if you don't want to, but you know, one of the sources of consternation in the Tesla retail community about ARC is just that you have that 10% max that it can make up any one of the single funds. But obviously that doesn't apply to individuals who work at ARC. And so just curious if you'd be willing to share like roughly what percentage of your portfolio would be made up of Tesla, since that's kind of your primary source of research and you understand the company so well.
Yes. So currently the way that things work at ARC, the employees don't buy and sell individual stocks. So these are positions that I've had for a long time, to be very clear. But you know, that said, Tesla makes up a very, very large percentage of my portfolio. So, the 10% rule, I mean, things can appreciate past that, which we've talked about before. But, you know, that it's really designed to make a good product that's diversified for retail investors. And I think it accomplishes that goal. I believe what I say on Tesla, and the opportunity for the company. So
one of us. Oh man, that's so funny. Okay. Tasha, where can people find your research? Where can people find you? And, lead us off here.
Okay. My handle on X is Tasha ARC. The arc-invest.com website has all of my research and all of my colleagues' research, which is really great. You guys should check it out. Sam Corris, I work with an associate, Daniel McGuire. He's amazing. Follow them as well on X. And I'm so happy and honored to be on this. And I love to keep up the conversation with you guys because you guys are in it, you know? It's like, and that's what's so great about Tesla, that there's this community where so many people really care about it and, you know, follow every thread as you guys do. So thanks.
Awesome. Of course. Yeah. Welcome back anytime, Tasha. It was an absolute pleasure and honor. And yeah, we look forward to having these discussions in the future.
Let's do it.